Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Steve Jobs did it with the iPod, but can he do it again with the iPhone? This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The big news today is the iPhone. It went on sale on Friday, and it has already sold 500,000 units. But can the gorgeous gadget, which combines music and video player with phone, web, and email capabilities, match its unprecedented hype? And even if it can it save Apple from the latest record label rebellion? We have a couple of guests. First, we're joined by New York Times tech columnist David Pogue, one of only four journalists who got early access to this year's It object. And we'll be taking your calls on the iPhone in a little bit, but right now David joins us from the studios of WSHU in Fairfield, Connecticut. David, welcome back.
Thank you so much.
Have you ever seen this much hype before?
Never. There has never been this much hype. This is the most hyped, most anticipated piece of electronic gear in history. I don't think there's any doubt of it.
Why?
People saw the demos. People saw an appliance that, unlike all other appliances which are valued for their utility, took it into another realm, a realm of, you know, art and fetishism and jewelry. It's another one of these Apple deals where they just said, here's a gadget that is ripe for remaking that nobody's paying any attention to, that everyone's satisfied, not satisfied, everyone's dissatisfied with the status quo, but nobody's doing anything about it, and they completely reinvented it.
So what is it that makes the iPhone so revolutionary?
Well, I mean, some of the things are, you know, obvious to everybody at this point. There's no buttons on it. It's a giant touch screen. In fact, the screen can detect two fingers on the screen at the same time, which makes possible all these glamorous animations. For example, you can enlarge a web page or a photo or an email by putting two fingers on the glass and unpinching.
Making a stretching motion, yeah.
Exactly. The whole picture
so when you say,
stretches as though it's on latex.
When you say giant screen, let's define our terms here. Giant meaning what?
3.5 inches wide screen, twice the size and resolution of, say, a Trio or a BlackBerry. So it's actually like a quarter of a you know, VGA computer screen. It's very high resolution. And by the way, I don't mean that this thing succeeds in all realms. It obviously doesn't. It lacks a lot of features that even basic phones have. It can't capture video. You can't send a picture you've taken with the camera to another cell phone. You can only send it by email, and so on. But to me, I think that's like people seeing the first Time Machine and complaining about the number of cup holders in it. I mean, you're missing the bigger picture here.
All right. Well, what about for music fans? Does this mean they can now toss their iPods?
Absolutely. Well, unless you want to carry around all 80 gigs of your collection, this thing tops out at 4 or 8 gigabytes. People complain about that, but what they have to remember is that it's a cell phone. You're going to be charging this every night anyway by hooking it up to your computer. So why not just grab a different playlist every night and, you know, eight gigs different every day and carry that around with you? It's a terrific iPod.
All right, we're speaking with David Pogue, the New York Times tech columnist, and we're also joined on the phone now by New York Magazine contributing editor John Heilman. His recent cover story asked, is the mighty Steve Jobs due for a fall? John, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks for having me.
You wrote in New York Magazine that for all of its marvels, iPhone inaugurates a dangerous new era for Steve Jobs. What makes it dangerous? What's at stake here?
Well, I think that the iPhone is a product that is a necessary product for Apple. And what my piece tried to lay out was the extent to which you know, the company has, by dint of its success over the course of the last, you know, 10 years since Steve Jobs came back to the company, and in particular over the last couple years, has put itself in a kind of precarious position. And I say by dint of its success, meaning, you know, that the company has been an incredible profit machine the last couple of years, and we've seen, for example, its market capitalization double in the course of the last 12 months. It's now a $100 billion company on the stock market, and what happens to companies when that sort of thing happens is that there's an intense pressure that comes onto them to keep their earnings growth at the pace that got them there in the first place. And so you have Steve Jobs looking at a situation where he needs to continue to grow the company's profitability at an incredibly rapid pace in order to justify that market capitalization. And on the side of the business that has driven most of that growth, the iPod side, I think there is a clear consensus, but there's a pretty strong argument to be made that although Apple will continue to sell a lot of iPods over the next 5 years, the iPod is about as profitable for the company as it will ever be right now, and that for a lot of reasons that I go into some detail and we can talk about today, you know, the company's the iPod is a product that is going to be has kind of peaked in terms of its profitability.
It's hit its saturation point in the market.
I mean, they're going to sell millions more of them, but it's going to be every single one that they sell is going to be less profitable than the ones they're currently selling. The price competition around the iPod is about to get a lot more severe for them, and so Steve needed a big, high-margin new product, and so this iPhone is not, I don't want to say it's a bet-the-company product, but it is a lot of the future of Apple is riding on the success of this product.
David Pogue, if the success of Apple is riding on the iPhone, would you be betting on that particular horse?
I couldn't disagree more with any of those statements. As a matter of fact, I have a file of Apple is dead articles that apply the same argument going back to 1984. In fact, I remember from 2004 there was an analyst when the iPad had 80% of the market who said, no company in history has ever maintained 80% market share of anything. This can't last. And 3 years later, it's not only lasted, they have more of the market. So I think trying to apply the lessons of the past to as weird a company as Apple doesn't necessarily apply.
Well, John Heilman, there is some, there is a dark cloud on the iPod horizon, and that is Universal, one of the major record labels, one of the big four, threatening to pull its music from iTunes. What do you make of the timing of the announcement? And, does this represent something in the music industry, maybe looking at that 600-pound gorilla and trying to figure out how to move them?
Well, the announcement that came today, which is that Universal is not going to extend its contract in an exclusive way over the long term, which is what they've been negotiating for the past 6 months. This announcement has been coming for a long time. It is the case that Steve's one of his great. I mean, you can't take anything away from the way in which Apple by through the combination of the iPod and iTunes convinced the music business that doing business online was a way for it that was possible for it to do that, and that was a way for the music business to make money online by selling music on the internet and by giving them strong copy protection software. The music industry was induced to get online in a way that it had been afraid to do before. So, Steve also locked those companies, the big record companies, into long-term exclusive deals, which allowed him to have pricing power over what the 99 cent per download model was not what the music industry would have wanted initially, and it's certainly not what it wants now. What it wants now is the ability to, A, decide how much their tracks are going to be sold for, that some tracks are worth less than 99 cents and some are worth more than 99 cents in the view of the record business. And what they also want is they want those tracks to be able to be played on not just on iPods, which is not the case with music that's bought over iTunes. And so Universal is not the only record company that's unhappy with that arrangement. They just happen to be the first one right now that's starting to flex their muscle and starting to say, look, we don't really want to have one music business, one music retailer that controls 80% of the market. And when we sell music through that retailer, the customer is limited in terms of what it can do with that music. And I think you're going to see a lot of defections from the Apple camp in this area for sure. And it's already happening among the independent labels are all trying to find a better way, a way around Apple, which they see as having become more of a gatekeeper than an enabler in the online music market.
Well, it would be very odd if Kanye West's new album, which is due out on one of Universal's labels in August, it would be very odd if that were not available on iTunes. At least for now, the single from the forthcoming record is available on iTunes.
Money should have changed them. I guess I should have forget where I came from. Wait till I get my money. You saying something? You can't tell me nothing. You can't tell me nothing. You can't tell me nothing.
Let up the suicide doors. This is my life, homie, you decide yours. I know that Jesus died for us, but I couldn't tell you who the side was. So I parallel double park that motherfucker sideways. Old folks talking about back in my day.
Kanye West, Can't Tell Me Nothing. The new album is due out in August on one of Universal's labels, and Universal threatening to pull out of iTunes. They don't like the idea that this song, which will probably be a huge hit, can be had for the same amount of money as some completely obscure tune from years ago that nobody really cares about. I mean, that's one of the issues. We're speaking with John Heilman, who's a contributing editor at New York Magazine, and also with New York Times tech columnist David Pogue, about the iPhone and the various subjects that it raises. And David, when we get back to the iPhone, here's an email from Paul, who has three problems with it. One is the battery. And actually, we've already started getting some phone calls from people saying the battery is a big problem. Another is that the touchscreen keyboard is hard to use. And the third is that AT&T service is slow. Was the deal with AT&T a mistake, do you think?
Maybe not a mistake. I think it was an inevitability. In other words, Apple requested and required total carte blanche. I don't think most people are aware that in the cellular industry, the cell phone makers are eternally frustrated by the cell phone carriers. The makers come up with these cool phones, cool features, and the carriers, Verizon, Singular, so on, say, no, I don't think so. I think we're going to do it like this. And all their great ideas are thrown in the trash. And Apple, obviously, is not one to give veto power to anybody. So it actually got Singular to agree to be the carrier, to agree to sell this phone without even seeing it, without even knowing what was in it. In fact, Apple gave them a phony user interface to work with during the development so they wouldn't even know what they had. So they needed carte blanche to break the bonds of traditional cell phones, and Singular was the one who would give it to them.
All right, now what about the non-removable battery? That seems like a real potential fly in the ointment.
The battery goes just like an iPod, 300 or 400 charges before it starts to lose as much charge as it once had. In other words, it goes to 80% charge. And the plan is you'll send it in for replacement by Apple for $60, just as with an iPod. So whether or not there will be a loaner program while the phone is out of your hands is to be determined. Apple says, well, look, you're covered for the first year anyway. If it happens during the first year, we'll replace it free. So we have a while before we need to announce the details of this program. But absolutely, it's a drawback compared to traditional cell phones. If you don't like it, you don't have to get this phone.
Right, right. What about drawbacks as a music player? I mean, I understand you can't people like to download wirelessly directly to their cell phones. You can't do that with an iPhone. You have to do it almost like an iPod, right?
I would say people don't like to download music to their cell phones. So far, those businesses have been sort of a bust. I personally don't know a single person who downloads pop songs from Sprint to their Sprint cell phones. You do have to load everything up from your computer. But again, remember, it's a cell phone. You're going to be connecting it to your computer to charge every night anyway.
All right. Now, the other thing is, I mean, it seems like with all Apple things, and John Heilman, you mentioned that, you know, Steve Jobs may have felt like he needed to rush something to the market. It often appears to me that Apple gets something, you know, version 1.0 out on the market, big splash, but there are always some kinks that need to be ironed out. Is that likely to be the case with the iPhone as well, that we're just seeing, you know, the first of a number of iterations of this machine?
Well, I mean, look, I've been saying for a while, you know, when people ask me whether I want this phone, I say, you know, it's a beautiful phone, and I may want this phone 6 months from now. I mean, I think Apple has been, you know, strikingly upfront about the fact that the phone is going to be a very different thing 6 months from now or a year from now than it is right now. And I think some of the things that you just mentioned with David, that, you know, depending on who you are, there are either large drawbacks or not. I mean, the phone, I mean, I think the battery life thing and having to send the phone back to Apple is kind of a classic Apple sort of planned obsolescence maneuver. I mean, most of us, how many people do you know who buy an iPod and then actually send it back for replacement? What they do is they go buy another iPod.
Right.
And that, I think, is what Apple's counting on. There are a lot of people who get very frustrated with that and actually kind of annoyed at Apple, but they love the iPod so much that they go and buy it again. Now, you know, you can say that's a brilliant strategy or it's a galling, arrogant strategy, but it obviously has worked for them on the iPod front.
John,
the phone doesn't have GPS in it. There are a lot of phones that have that now, so the whole mapping feature of the phone isn't as good as it should be. The keyboard issue is another issue. I do think this phone is going to be a lot better, and it's going to be very different, you know, 6 or 9 months from now. And for anybody who doesn't have $600 just to have a fashion accessory for the next 6 months, it might be wise to wait just at least until Christmas and see how much better it is then.
All right, John, the businessweek.com, there's an article there today asserting that the I in iPhone should stand for isolation and suggesting that all of this kind of stuff, you know, it can be bad for our community relationships, personal relationships, just being civil to other people, and even things like being safe on the roads. Do you think, are I things somehow bad for society?
I'm not on that bandwagon. I mean, I think the notion that technology is that technology that engrosses us and immerses us is somehow a bad thing in some broader social sense is not an argument that persuades me very much. I mean, I love my iPod and I'm happy to drift off into it and become part of the soundscape of the music orchestrate the visual encounters that I have through my day in a kind of powerful and lovely way. And I think it doesn't hamper my social life in any significant way. I talk to people just as much as I talked to them before. So I tend to think that's a little bit of a Luddite, people who don't like technology very much have been complaining about the way that technology isolates us going back as far as radio, and it strikes me as a little silly.
Okay. We have to take a quick break, but we'll return. We'll have more with New York Times tech columnist David Pogue and New York Magazine's John Heilman, and we want to hear from you. Were you one of the lucky, well, I can't say lucky few, they've hit the 500,000 mark. Were you one of the lucky 500,000 to score an iPhone? And if so, why? Why the rush? If you resisted the hype, why? And what do you think of this obsession with I things and I people? Is it good or bad for our social fabric? Our number is 212-264-7483. 212-264-7483. You can email us, soundcheck@wnyc.org, or you can leave a comment on the soundcheck page of our website, wnyc.org. Soundcheck, I'm John Schaefer. You might recognize this music, even if you don't recognize the band, Orba Squara. It was used to sell iPods recently on TV. And we've been talking with John Heilman of New York Magazine and David Pogue of the New York Times about the new iPhone and asking, you know, what does it mean to have all these things that really can both connect us and isolate us at the same time? Are things like iPods that put you into a little pod space good for society? You can give us a call at 212-264-7483. And if you went out and bought the new iPhone, well, this is your opportunity to call us and we'll test the quality for you. You can also email us, soundcheck@wnyc.org, the number 212-264-7483. David Pogue was one of only four reviewers to get early access to the iPhone. John, you had all weekend to buy yours, but you did not. Why?
Well, I think I just, you know, right before your break, you know, I just made the point about the extent to which I think the phone will be a different and better product 6 months or 9 months down the line. So I'm gonna hold my wallet for a little while and also sort of see what the reports are of the bugs in the phone as it starts to get a little bit more significant usage out there. You also mentioned earlier the fact that the phone is on the slower AT&T network right now. And I think, again, one of the things that we'll see in the next 6 or 9 months is that is the phone will transition over to the faster AT&T network, which will also make it a lot more attractive product then.
All right. Now, David, unlike the iPod, with the iPhone, Apple is entering a very crowded market. I mean, Nokia has like 40% of the market share. There are many phones elsewhere in the world that are already loaded with functions that, you know, American cell phone users are not used to and that, you know, we're making much of with the iPhone. Do you think the iPhone can have the same kind of impact as the iPod?
You're asking me this after they sell 500,000 in 2 days? I think you've answered your own question.
All right, so maybe it was a rhetorical question.
I mean, I have to say, first of all, there's the things that the phone offers, which are quite different. I mean, it's very hard to answer the question, should I get this instead of a BlackBerry? Because the BlackBerry is years better at business functions, but it can't hold a candle to this in terms of internet and, you know, entertainment. But I think the bigger thing that people are missing is the impact of this phone on the industry. In other words, already, article in the New York Times today about 11 cell phone makers all rushing to mimic and copy the breakthroughs and the innovations of this phone, number one. And number two, the model where the cell phone maker, Steve Jobs, went to the carrier and said, we're going to do this and you have to shut up, I think is huge. If other cell phone makers, if Nokia, if Motorola, if all these companies are no longer under the veto power of the carriers, we're going to see a blossoming of innovation, of new sizes and shapes and features. You know, one of the cool things about the iPhone is this visual voicemail. You don't dial in for your messages. They just arrive on the phone in what looks like an email program. You can play them in any order. This has been available for years. Phone makers were offering this to the carriers 3 years ago, and the carriers said, no.
Yeah.
And now their phones are ringing off the hook, the phone makers.
All right.
So
let's
it's a new world of innovation, in theory.
Speaking of phones ringing off the hook, let's see what some of our Soundcheck listeners have to say. And we'll begin with John in Brooklyn. John, are you an iPhone owner now or not?
I am not an iPhone owner. I own a phone. It's totally dated. It must be at least 7 or 8 years old. It doesn't even do internet or email.
All right. So what about the iPhone? I mean, it was just too much hype for you? You're happy with what you have? Or?
Well, I had a question. David, I love your columns and the stuff you do on the internet and all that. But I'm not hearing any specifics about what's new about this thing or what's revolutionary. The most specific thing I've heard is that you move your fingers apart and the screen gets bigger. It's like I drive a Subaru that has funky cup holders. But, you know, this is not, to go back to David's analogy, the cup holders in the time machine. Just because it has a funky cup holder in my car, there's nothing revolutionary about my engine. So what's all new and different about the iPhone? What is it doing different?
Good question.
And I'll hang up and hear your answer.
Okay, thanks, John.
Okay, thank you.
Let's set aside the whole issue of the fact that you won't know until you hold one, which is that, I'm sorry to say this, it makes you feel good like an iPod. It's a delight to use. Okay, but that doesn't count to the feature accountant. So for one thing, the web. You see the real web, the full layout, fonts, pop-up menus, the whole thing as you would on a computer, not some stripped-down UniFont Trio or BlackBerry version, the real web in a large rectangular format, not a little square. That's very different and extremely useful. Number two, your email. It appears fully formatted with all the embedded graphics, the attachments you can open, and so on. And then the storage. What other phone has 8 gigabytes of storage? You know, you can hold hours of movies and videos and music and so on.
Isn't there some feature where if you tilt the thing 90 degrees that you tilt the screen, the screen sort of goes from landscape to portrait and back again?
Yep, that's right. If you're looking at a photo or a web page that would look better in horizontal orientation rather than vertical, you just turn the phone and it changes. But that's a Subaru cup holder. That doesn't count.
All right. Let's take another call. Philip is calling us from the LIE, the Long Island Express, and Philip is calling on an iPhone. How's it working, Philip?
There should be some special music, shouldn't there, for the first call from an iPhone? You know, it's incredible, and I wanted to answer that last caller. What's new is the incredible ease of use. I had avoided a BlackBerry because my wife has one, and trying to figure out how to get an email or find something on the Internet is just amazingly difficult. This thing, I look at it, I push a button that looks like the Internet, and boom, I'm on.
Yeah,
and I set up my email in about 3 seconds, which I've never done before on a phone. And it's just stunningly simple.
I have to say, Philip, as a longtime BlackBerry addict, I also find trying to get on the web on one of these machines a frustrating experience. So you're saying it's just like having a regular, you know, laptop in your lap or something
like
that?
You know, in a way, it's a lot easier. I've been a Mac guy for a long time, but the fact that you push one button to get back to your home screen, and then there are basically four buttons on the bottom, phone, Internet, I forget
email
what the other two are, but it's
Don't
really
go looking now.
Simple.
You're driving. Just we'll take your word for it.
I can't look at the moment. But the thing
Philip, you said there should be some great music, some special music for the first iPhone call. We don't have special music, but we do have a selection of iPhone ringtones. David, what's on your iPhone? Did you use any of those?
No, there's a little blues riff that I use. And by the way,
I kind of like the marimba thing. The spacey sounds, that'll make you stand out in a crowd.
You know, John, have you noticed something interesting? The iPhone is very polarizing, as even people who've just listened to this broadcast have told. The raving fans tend to be the people who've used one. And the bashers tend to be people who haven't. So I think that's a sort of a key point.
All right. John Heilman, you know, if the iPhone is meeting, or as it seems now, exceeding what were some pretty lofty sales expectations, do you think this is going to drive like major changes in the way the cell phone market works, the way people use portable music, portable webcasting, that sort of thing?
Well, gosh, let's be clear about one thing. And with this is in no way to take away anything from Apple's achievement so far. It's been 3 days, and 500,000 units. They sold a lot of phones. We all thought they were going to sell a lot of phones. The hype on this product, and which has been spontaneous. And you have to take your hat off, because I think that Apple has been even astonished by the degree of the hype around it. And it does speak to people's frustration with their current phones, that people have been as excited about this product as they have been. But it's a billion unit market. 500,000 units is really just a tiny drop in that bucket, and they're not going to keep selling these phones at this pace that they sold them over this weekend. So the question about whether the thing meets or doesn't meet or exceeds expectations, we're not going to know the answer to that question for at least 6 months, probably more likely a year, before we have any concept. I totally agree with David that this is going to usher in a huge amount of innovation in the cell phone marketplace. There's absolutely no doubt about that. But that raises another question, and I don't have an answer to this question, but you know, every cell phone maker in the world right now has a copy or more than one copy of this phone, and they've taken it apart, and they're studying it with thousands of engineers trying to replicate every single feature that Steve has built into this phone. And Apple's a very innovative company, but you know, there are a lot of good software engineers at places like Nokia and at Motorola and at Sony Ericsson. And my question, and this is the unanswerable question, but you know, Apple changed the world of computing with the Macintosh in 1984 and looked up 3 years later, and everything that was in the Macintosh had been taken in a less seductive form and applied to the personal computer market, and Microsoft and Intel ended up with 95% of that market, and Apple ended up with where they are now, which is 4 or 5%. I say this as a Macintosh lover. I've never owned anything other than a Macintosh, but you know, is that going to happen again in the cell phone market? It's certainly conceivable this phone could, you know, become 2% of the worldwide market, which would be a nice thing for Apple, but not take over this world of cell phones, and that could see a lot of its innovations copied, and it could end up being marginalized in much the same way as the Mac was.
Dave, although that's certainly not what happened with the iPod. I mean, they've been trying to.
That's
catch
what
the
I
iPod.
Was going
to
say. Yeah.
Well, but notice there were no significant other competitors in the market for digital music players when the iPod came out. It was pretty much a green field for Apple. And this is a very different circumstance. You can't possibly argue that these are similar circumstances, given the competitive state of this landscape. compared to the way that the world was for the iPod when the iPod came out 5 years ago.
All right, well, we're going to have to leave it there, guys. Thanks to everyone who called, lots of people dialing in with or without iPhones to talk about their experiences. And we've been speaking with John Heilman of New York Magazine and David Pogue, the tech columnist of the New York Times. Guys, thanks to both of you for joining us today as well.
Thanks a lot.
My pleasure.
This is Soundcheck.